We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Mike Gorman, and you're listening to Green with Envy with Will, Adam, and Greg.
All right, everybody. Happy Patriots Day. Happy belated Mike Gorman Day. Happy the playoffs are set and ready to get going. We got a lot to get into. We know what the playoff field looks like. And of course, we're going to celebrate Mike Gorman on his farewell season here. So we got a lot to get into. So let's get it going. It's Green with Envy. You know the deal. Let's lock in. What up? Welcome into another edition of Green with Envy. As always, this is your boy Will Weir checking in. How you doing? How you living? Joining me today on this Patriots Day edition, Marathon Monday edition of Green with Envy, it's my best friend, co-host, and the coach of our podcast, the one and only Greg Menakis. Happy Monday to you, my guy.
Happy Monday, brother. Happy Monday. Playoffs are pretty much all set except for the play-in, so I'm pretty excited, man. It was a really fun weekend of sports. We watched UFC 300 together for most of it. The Masters were on. I didn't watch any of the Masters, but normally that's a pretty big weekend for people. And then the NBA just killing it with their slate of games on Friday and Sunday. Made for a really fun sports weekend.
Yeah, man. I was watching, I think it was on Friday night. I got into watching some of the especially because Friday night was a little bit, ended up being a little bit more interesting with some of the games than Sunday, because there were still teams trying to get some rest and there were some weird blowouts, and you know, there's still drama, no doubt, still drama, because nothing was settled other than basically the Celtics is the one seed, which, as you all know, we've been trying to find content for about 3 weeks here to try to get through the last couple of weeks here with the Celtics having locked everything up so early. We knew the play-in in the East and we knew the 4-5 in the West. Literally everything else had to be figured out. And I will say Friday night, the NBA killed it with their, have you ever watched their Crunch Time? Did they do, it's basically their version of NFL Red Zone.
Yeah, I did like, that. I watched that during the in-season tournament.
Yeah, and the nights that they structure it to have it going, that is, they need to do that more often. I think, I don't know if they did it last year. I don't really remember. This is the first year I remember they've done it. Like you said, the in-season tournament, I think a few select nights. The NBA needs to double down on finding ways to make crunch time happen more often, because it is amazing when you have the staggered schedule, and especially when you get this late in the season and you're trying to figure out what's happening where and what's going on. And, you know, not all of us have the luxury of having six TVs plastered on the wall. So it's nice to have a laptop and maybe one TV or two TVs going and being able to flip back and forth. And the drama all weekend for the NBA was just there. You know, the West was crazy. The East, I got to say this, man, the East, this might be the most mid or mediocre East in a long time, with just teams either figuratively or literally limping into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, Giannis's injury is definitely something which opens the door for the Pacers. Let's just pull up the playoffs here. Let's start talking about it. You know, the Bucks are in a really tough
position. Here, I'm going to set the table real quick with just all the matchups that we got right now.
Sure, go for it.
All right, so the playoffs are set. We've been waiting. Celtics wrapped up their season on Sunday. The Mike Gorman party wasn't even a game. It was just a Mike Gorman party. The game itself was irrelevant. Shout out to Peyton Pritchard. Nearly 30-point triple-double. Hell of a performance. Loves playing on that last game of the season. Seems to be the Peyton Pritchard moment in time. But now with everything set in stone, you can see it here pulled up on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. In the East, we know we've got the 7-8 play-in is Philly-Miami, 9-10, Bulls-Hawks. And then we've got the Pacers at 6 against the Bucks at 3. Shout out to the New York Knicks pulling off the 2 seed. And we've got the Cavaliers and Magic in the 4-5. We'll hit on the West here a little bit later, but let's focus on the East right now. And, you know, Greg, you were kind of responding to my, the East is very much so figuratively and literally limping into this postseason outside of the Celtics.
Yeah, so the first matchup I want to talk about is the Bucks and the Pacers, because the Pacers handled the Bucks this year. I think they were either 3-1 or 4-1 against the Bucks in the regular season. And Giannis's injury obviously is huge. If Giannis can't be full strength in that series, if he's not even going to play in that series, there hasn't been.
There was an update this morning, okay, actually, that they're feeling less likely that he's going to be available for at least game one, which would also then imply potentially he might not be back till game two, game three, you know? Right. So it's seeming like this is a lingering injury for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, if the Bucks are, if the Bucks lose to the Pacers in the first round, which seems pretty likely, honestly, if Giannis isn't playing, I would bet on the Pacers over the Bucks in the first round. If Giannis isn't playing, and then that opens up the door for either the Knicks, the Sixers, or the Heat going into round two, going against the Pacers, which would be pretty sweet if you're a fan of any of those fan bases. That's just like as dynamite as you could want to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, to go up against probably the Celtics, right? Maybe there's a world in which the Heat or the Sixers, if they lose that first game, could upset the Celtics in the first round. I don't even want to entertain that thought right now. So you'd be looking at, like,
I'm telling Celtics, you right now, it cannot happen.
Yeah, I don't think it could happen either. But the Celtics-Knicks Eastern Conference Finals is what I want, to be honest with you. I think that would be the most fun Eastern Conference Finals. There's going to be a lot that comes out with the NBA awards. Does Jalen Brunson end up making first team all over Jason Tatum? He's definitely going to be in the top five MVP over Jason Tatum, judging by all the discourse surrounding the MVP right now. But I would really love for Jason Tatum to like get his revenge in the Eastern Conference Finals and just be like, you really thought this dude was better than me? Come on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, from a Celtics perspective, this broke pretty well, right? Out of all the scenarios that they could have had for how this breaks down, you know, I'm poking fun at the East here, calling it mediocre and limping in. And it's weird because I think it's more, there's more talent in the East now than when you look at like some of those Isaiah Thomas runs, which is funny. I think there's some parallels between the Knicks run and some of the Isaiah Thomas Celtics teams, which is being led by that smaller guard that, yeah, they should be top five, but really, are they going to find a way to get out of the East against, you know, Giannis is hurt, Embiid, but Tatum, like there's so many other guys that are out there. And I think this Knicks team is honestly probably better than that Celtics Isaiah Thomas team, just from a talent standpoint, but not necessarily the point I'm trying to make here. But, you know, there's a lot of talent, but think about this. Celtics, I made the reference several weeks ago. Were the Celtics going to get the 60 wins before the next team got to 50 wins? We almost didn't have another team in the East get to 50 wins if it wasn't for the Knicks pulling out an overtime victory against the Bulls on the last game of the season. Like, that's crazy to think about. That is crazy to think about. So, you know, looking at the way that this all breaks down and you factor in the injuries for the Celtics, you got to be pretty happy with right now, you know, looking at that 7-8 matchup. I get it. I'm right there with everybody else. It's like, I feel like Heat are going to, you know, Heat if end up losing that first game and then you end up getting the Heat in the first round, fuck it. Bring them on. The Celtics team cannot lose in the East. They just can't. Just after everything from this season, the Celtics cannot lose this East. I'm at the point now where as the playoffs are just a couple days away, I'm refusing to believe there's a world the Celtics don't make it out of the East. Can't see it.
Yeah, I think we're 18 games better than the Miami Heat this year. You know what I mean?
That's significant.
if we lose in the first round of the Heat, this team just isn't the team that we thought they were, and there would be huge changes in the offseason, right? I don't see that world happening. I really, you know, I've been saying it all year, man. I really like the Knicks. And if OG can be healthy in the playoffs, then I think that they do have the recipe to hang with the Celtics, just because Randle, although he's out, I don't think he's as important to them. I think he actually hurts them in a lot of ways against the Celtics. Whereas OG, if you're just saying like, oh, we're switching out Randle for OG, I think that that's actually probably going to help them in a lot of ways, just matching up with the Celtics. Randle would be someone that we could target on the defensive end. And OG is just, you know, he's the secret sauce for the Knicks to unlock their defense. You know, he can switch on to Porzingis. They start Hartenstein now instead of Robinson. I think that early in the season when the Celtics were kicking the Knicks' ass, it's because they were starting Mitchell Robinson and he couldn't get out to Porzingis, right? I said early in the season, I think Hartenstein actually probably matches up better against the Celtics than Robinson does. Now Robinson's coming off the bench. They got OG who can also switch with Tatum. And Dante DiVincenzo has just taken his game to a whole nother level. The fact that he's on fire.
He played, I think it was 53 minutes in that game yesterday.
Tibbs is a madman.
He's an absolute lunatic.
Yeah, absolute lunatic. And then they got Bogdanovich coming off the bench now, who's always killed the Celtics in the past. You know, they're only going to play 7 to 8 guys, and those 7 to 8 guys are all gritty, and they're all going to, you know, really give the Celtics some issues and just muck it up for them. And then obviously Jalen Brunson, who has been unstoppable. Nobody has figured out how to stop Jalen Brunson this year. The Celtics have all the pieces to do it, but he's also the type of guard in the past that's given the Celtics problems. And if you're relying on a Porzingis drop defense against Jalen Brunson, it's going to get cooked, right? So the Celtics would then have to make a lot of adjustments, probably playing Porzingis much less minutes or trying to figure out some, maybe that's where they go to the zone. Maybe that's where they try out some different things to slow down Brunson. But, you know, I think that would be an Al Horford series versus a Porzingis series if we're looking at it that way. But, you know, that's getting ahead of ourselves. I wanted to ask you a question real quick about the first round of the playoffs. So seeing how it's all shaken out right now, what is the most, let's just assume that the Sixers win the first round against the Heat, and then the Heat win the next game. So Sixers are the 7th seed, Heat are the 8th seed. What is the most interesting first round to you?
Most interesting first round? Unfortunately, it's probably the Heat Celtics. It's probably Heat Celtics, and then it's either Heat Celtics or it's Knicks Sixers.
Right. So it's the 1 versus 8 and 2 versus 7, the 4 versus 5 and 3 versus 6. You normally, those are the more competitive ones, but I don't think those are going to be.
I mean, I told you last week, if it breaks Cavs magic, that's the NBA TV series, right? Like if somehow the Bulls or Hawks get out of the play-in and we end up playing them, that will become the NBA TV series. But if it stays as is, like you said, holds true, Sixers end up playing the Knicks, Heat play the Celtics, neither of those, with those markets and the history between the Celtics and Heat, are ending up on NBA TV. Like, that's the Cavs magic. Cavs magic is going to be, even though it's a 4-5 matchup, the least compelling, you know, entertainment-wise. And when you factor in kind of their styles, especially when you get into the postseason, like, that's just not going to be, you know, made for TNT, ESPN, whatever. So it is kind of fascinating that would be the two most intriguing. And I will say there's a caveat to this, because I don't really know what the deal is with Joel Embiid. It's a weird move in a game that they needed to win in order to stay out of the play-in that he didn't play. And I get it's precautionary, but I feel like even with the stat lines that he's put up since he's come back, which are usually like 30, 10, and 7 or something that's very Embiid-like, there's constantly a clip that you and I are sharing in one of our chats of, oh, hey, Embiid came up limp again, and it looks like he's limping, but then you look at the stats, and he played 30 minutes and had all these crazy numbers, but then he rests in a game that they need. I don't know. That doesn't feel great. It doesn't feel like a good sign for Philly. And so even if they can get the play-in, it doesn't really seem like getting through a series, never mind 2, 3, or 4, like, is really going to be a thing that the Sixers are going to be able to do.
Right. It is interesting. I'm kind of thinking through this as you're talking about it. So, like, if it's a rest thing for Embiid, if he had played the other day and, like, things broke out and they won and he ends up getting into the 6th seed or the 5th seed, whatever they had available to them.
Yeah.
You know, then he gets a week off, right?
Right.
Now he gets 5 days off going into the play-in, but it didn't really matter because they won their game anyway and they still didn't get into into the sixth seed. So maybe they were just taking that calculated risk that, because they weren't playing anybody good. I forget who they were playing.
Yeah, they played the Nets, who I think mostly rested. Exactly. And there, so I mean, I did look at all the breakdowns. So basically, win or lose, it was basically 50-50, depending on what stuff out of their control, if they were going to be the six or seven. For them to have a chance, which it was a small chance for them to get to the five seed, they had to win. So that was basically the setup. So it absolutely could have been calculated. Listen, win or lose, 50-50 chance, we end up 6-7. Let's just rest Embiid.
And trust that our guys who've been playing really well, even without Embiid since he's come back, will be able to take care of business against a Nets team that does not want to be there. And the Nets team clearly did not want to be there because they got their ass kicked.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Yeah, yeah, very true. So, I mean, it absolutely could have been that. But like I said, just seeing constantly that there is clips every single night of Embiid stopping weird or limping back despite...
He's kind of an awkward dude, though.
He is, but I mean, this is the Rob Williams thing. This is the same Rob Williams injury where we went through this. Rob Williams is an awkward dude. Like, the way he jumps and lands and, you know, just moves, we were like, every 2 seconds, it was, what did that mean? Is that something? Because sometimes it is. Is it nothing? Because a lot of the times,
and for him, and for him, if for them to have a chance at the finals, Embiid needs to be full strength, right?
So, right.
Like, they might be able to give the Knicks a push in the first round or give the Celtics a push in the first round. But if Embiid isn't firing on all cylinders, they don't have a chance.
So do you have a preference? So let's look at the play-in right here. Number one, between Sixers and Heat, I feel like it's kind of a toss-up, not knowing fully what to expect out of Embiid. Do you have a lean either way with this, Sixers Heat?
I'd rather play the Heat than the Sixers. I think the Heat have shown all year that they're not the team that they have been in the past. I know that this is a running narrative with the Heat from years past as well, but you know, they're a year older. Jimmy Butler's a year older and he looks a year older. Anytime I tune into the Heat, I'm just like, man, Jimmy just doesn't look the same. And with the Sixers, I really like the moves that they made when they traded Harden. I think that when I saw them play, I think it was against the Celtics after the trade, and Covington was giving Jaylen Brown problems. Nick Batum was covering Tatum well. Then they got Embiid. They've got Maxi, they've got Oubre, who I think was a huge sneaky pickup for them in the offseason. And then now they got Kyle Lowry on the team, who's always been a thorn in the Celtics side. Buddy Hield. You know, there's a world in which the Sixers probably they're the second most talented team. Right.
Yeah. I mean, once again, this is all Embiid based. I'm just fully in the camp of I don't believe Embiid.
But even if the Bucks are fully healthy and the Sixers are fully healthy, I'd probably take the Sixers roster over the Bucks roster.
Yeah, I would too. I would too. Like, I mean, we were saying this when Embiid was having his MVP run that 76ers looked different. And this is before they got Buddy Hield and, you know, made that, and Kyle Lowry. But like the 76ers did look different to start this season. And if Embiid's healthy, I feel entirely different. I just 100% just based on his history, based on, you know, the precautionary measures they're taking. And I just can't imagine that, you know, yeah, they can get this play-in game with or without him. It's a one game. It's a toss-up. It's the whole point of this. Like, mm-hmm. I want to talk a little Bulls and Hawks here, because there is a realistic chance one of those teams finds their way into the TD Garden next Sunday, because it's a one game scenario. Yep. And so the Sixers, you know, winning that game against the Heat with or without Embiid at full strength, fully possible. Like, let's say this then. Let's say it's Sixers, Knicks. You're getting, I don't know, 75% of Embiid. Let's factor in he misses at least one game. At least one game at some point in that first round. Who are you taking, and what do you think that series goes? If it's Knicks?
Oh, I think even if Embiid's healthy, I'm taking the Knicks. I really like
them. I'm in the same position as you here. Yeah. So that's why, like, with the Sixers, I'm just kind of like, whatever. Because with Embiid, everything you're saying is this would have been a Celtics Sixers matchup waiting to happen, I think, even if the Bucks are at full strength in the conference finals. But without that, I think the Knicks take care of the 76ers. I think the Knicks take care of the Heat. I mean, I think both, even though we said the Celtics in the Knicks series, if it breaks the way that the seeds are set right now, those are the two most interesting series. I actually don't see either of those going much beyond five games.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. Do you want to talk about the West at all? Or do you want to move on to our?
Let's talk Bulls Hawks for a second. Do you give the Bulls, like the Bulls who just gave the Knicks everything that they could handle for the Knicks to get that two seed? You know, the Knicks the Bulls have some talent, right? We've talked a lot about Caruso. They've got DeRozan. You know, they've got Vucevic. Fine, whatever. Like, you know, they don't have LaVine. But, you know, the Bulls have played in, basically them and the Warriors have just lived in clutch time, right? Those two teams have played clutch games all season long. And obviously, you know, they finished 39-43. They fell short in many of those games, but they were competitive and right in it. And, you know, we saw recently the Hawks beat the Celtics two times back to back. You know, the DeJounte Murray game, Trae Young just came back. I haven't had a chance to see what Trae Young has looked like since he came back, but he just came back towards the end of this week. So when you look at Bulls Hawks, we just spent some time talking about Sixers Heat. You know, number one, who do you think comes out of that Bulls Hawks game? And then number two, what chance would you give that team versus the loser of that Sixers Heat game?
Well, I think the Hawks are going to be missing Jalen Johnson and Okongwu. I think that they're out for an extended period. So I'd probably go the Bulls. I think DeRozan could very easily be the best player in that series. Caruso is going to take out either Trae Young or DeJounte Murray. So I'd probably go Bulls in that game. And then if it's Bulls Heat, you know, that's what happened last year. And the Bulls were right there at the end of it, and they had a chance to win. And if it's Hawks Heat, the Hawks beat the Heat in the first round in the play-in last year. So there's a world in which the Heat don't make it in, and I'm kind of leaning towards that's what happens. I think there's a real chance that the Heat just like shit the bed this year, and they just prove that they are who they've been showing us they are all year, and they're just not a good team. But at the same time, you know, there's still 46-36 versus 36-46, which is what the Hawks are.
It's a pretty big difference between
difference there. And, you know, I think the more interesting, well, the more fun matchup is Hawks Heat, just because you get Trae, you get DeJounte. I think that would be a lot more fun to watch than Bulls Heat, but I'd probably lean towards the Bulls coming out of there. And then since I'm no longer a betting man and I can just make hypothetical bets, I'd bet on the Bulls to beat the Heat.
Yeah, I think the Bulls have a real chance to come out of this. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Once again, I don't want to linger on anymore. All depends on what Embiid looks like. But, you know, for the Celtics, before we move on to just checking in on the West here, you know, this is, like I said, just about as good as you could get it here. Is one way or another, you're going to have the Bucks, Knicks, and Sixers or Heat all on the same side of the bracket to go ahead and eliminate each other before they ever have a chance to play the Celtics. And I still think if you have to, you know, pick a team that you'd want the Celtics to play out of the play-in, it would probably still be the Bulls or Hawks, despite what we've been saying about the Heat. And so if they somehow get, you know, the Bulls or Hawks in that first round, and then they're waiting on the Cavaliers Magic, damn, that's as good as you could have asked for this Celtics team, and coming in being fully healthy and ready to go. it is it's in their hands, man. It's yeah. gonna be I'm gonna enjoy this playoff run, but some of the pressure is gonna be mounting throughout the playoffs based on the way the dominance that they had throughout this regular season and the way some of these East teams look coming into the playoffs, that there will be no excuse for this team to be made if they are not in the NBA Finals come June.
Totally agree. I don't think they should lose more than two games in any series. Most series, they should only lose one game.
Yep, that's where we're at. So we'll check back in on the play-in as that gets going later this week. Both games are on Wednesday. I believe that's kind of a scheduling thing with something going on in Philly. So both West games on Tuesday, both East games on Wednesday, and then both 8-9 matchups will be on Friday night. So we won't know who the Celtics are playing until Friday night. So we'll have some coverage. We'll have probably some type of preview over this weekend, maybe on Saturday or so, leading into the game on Sunday. So stay tuned for that. But let's check in on the West here, Greg, because the West was kind of fun. The West ended up really kind of uniquely breaking that you had a lot of movement late, and part of that included the Spurs. The Spurs taking out the Nuggets Friday night with Wemby just going nuts, 17 points in 3 minutes. And did it with basically the G League Spurs. He did it with the Austin Spurs. Like, they didn't have Devin Vassell, didn't have Keldon Johnson, didn't have Jeremy Sohan, had Devontae Graham and I don't know, a bunch of guys that most of us have probably never heard of.
Well, we saw Mamu play live last year, and we actually really liked
Mamu. I liked Mamu. Yeah, he was good in that game here in Austin. And they took down a Nuggets team that was at full tilt, man. They were at full tilt, going to get the one seed, and Wemby, you know, knocked them down and put their last day and made it really meaningful. And ultimately it breaks with, we get the Thunder at the one seed, the Nuggets at the two seed, the T-Wolves lose to the Suns on the last day of the season, which puts them in the three seed against the Suns as the sixth seed, who with their win avoided the play-in as the Pelicans lost to the Lakers. So they'll actually rematch with the Lakers in the 7-8 matchup. We knew 4-5 was going to be Clippers, Mavericks. Clippers ended up getting the home court advantage in that series. And then the 9-10 matchup, Kings hosting the Warriors. And Greg, you texted me this
last year.
Yeah, rematch of last year. And Greg, you texted me this yesterday. Pelicans, Lakers. The winner, your prize, is going to play the Nuggets as the two seed. So you asked me, should the Lakers potentially throw this game? What do you think they should do?
I don't think they should throw the game, but I think that if it like comes down to it and they're down like 20 points with 8 minutes left in the game, like maybe it's like, all right, we're just going to rest. Like, we're cool. You know, we'll sit our guys until the next one, because I think they should be the favorite to beat whoever comes out of the Warriors Kings. Obviously, one game, anything can happen, and Steph should be on the court there. But you can't beat the Nuggets. Like, there's no world, honestly, unless somebody gets hurt, that I could see either the Lakers or Pelicans beating the Nuggets. There is a very strong chance I could see them beating the Thunder, right? So if you're just weighing risk and reward there, like, you might lose and you might not make the playoffs, but it doesn't matter if you make the playoffs and you're playing the Nuggets, because you're losing the first round anyway, and you're probably losing in 4 or 5 games, you know? So in my opinion, if I were them, I would seriously consider it. I don't think they're going to. They're competitors, they're professionals. They're not going to pull a Cleveland Cavaliers and just tank the last game of the year, which is apparently what the Cavs did yesterday.
Dude, I don't know what the Cavs are doing.
So I think that they're going to try to win, and they're going to be competitors and say, let's take down the Nuggets. Like, we're not ducking anybody, all that stuff. But there's a world in which maybe they just don't try as hard and they end up going against the Thunder, because that is the smart move. There's no chance that the Lakers beat the Nuggets. There's no chance. But there's a very strong chance to beat the Thunder. I would do it.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. It's LeBron. I can't imagine a LeBron team just laying down, especially in knowing that you're playing with the basketball gods here. If it's a one game scenario, if you lose this, like, and they've spent all season clawing to get to the 7-8 scenario where it's one win. And so we have the chance that if we have to be in the play-in, let's be in the game where we have to win once, not the 9-10 where we have to win twice.
Probably assuming you're going to win twice in the first seed, though.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like I said, that's what I was going to say, is that, you know, you didn't know what the seeding was going to look like. Yeah, it'll be interesting to play out, because the Lakers are a really bad matchup for the Thunder. Like, if the Pelicans win and ends up being Lakers versus Warriors, Kings, or whoever, you know, whoever wins that game, I would assume the Lakers would win that next game, but you never know. But if they get that 8 seed, man, I think they beat the Thunder. I think they beat the Thunder. I think the Lakers at least then have a potential path to the conference finals. And then who knows what happens if you can get yourself.
Oh, I mean, the Lakers can beat they can beat the Clippers or the Mavs.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying there's a path. There's a path for them to get to the conference finals. And then who knows what happens on the other side of the bracket, you know, in those first two rounds, injury-wise, wins, upsets. Like, the Suns have kind of had the T-Wolves number for whatever reason. I actually feel like that would be a bad matchup for the Suns, but I think they're 3-1 versus the Timberwolves this year.
And then if the T-Wolves beat the Suns and the Nuggets win the 2-7 matchup, then you get T-Wolves Nuggets, which was last year was really competitive. So that would actually be really fun. And the Suns, I think the Suns took two games from the Nuggets as well. So the West really broke out in a way that I think is going to lead to max entertainment for sure. Like getting Steph Curry, you get Steph Curry, LeBron James, Zion Williamson, De'Aaron Fox in the play-in. Like that's pretty sweet. That's an entertaining.
What's your ideal play-in results for the West? Who do you want to win for max entertainment value?
I think I want the Lakers Nuggets and I want the Pelicans Thunder. I think that would be the most entertaining first round. I kind of want the Lakers to make it to the 1-8 though and beat the Thunder, because I actually think it would be really fun to see LeBron going up against either Kawhi in a rematch there or going up against Luka. So I think that would be really, really fun. So although I don't like rooting for the Lakers, I think in this scenario for my own entertainment, that's what I would
entertainment.
Like to see.
This is one of those things, right? Like nobody likes to see Duke and the Yankees and whatever else, but like LeBron is in that same category. The Patriots,
it's more fun when they're
right? Exactly, it's way more fun. So I'm with you. I think the interesting one is I'm with you. So let's say the Lakers win. It's Nuggets Lakers. That'll be entertaining within itself. Even if the better path for the Lakers is going to be to keep LeBron in the playoffs longer, is going to be them playing the Thunder. Nuggets Lakers will still be fun to watch. You know, to see Anthony Davis, LeBron, Nikola Jokic, a lot of star power. But then if you get, let's say, the Kings for me, by the way, are the easiest team to write off here. That like
Malik Monk went out, it was just like what's the point.
Yeah, and they're just, I just don't think they're going to beat any of these teams. Like, it's whatever. So, sorry, Kings, but you're easily number four in this. And then it becomes Pelicans, Warriors, and it's, do we want to get, I kind of want to see a full Zion experience in the playoffs, but also Steph Curry's always still hella fun when you get him in the playoffs. Like, that's still one of the funnest
things. Thunder Pelicans games have been fun as fuck this year, though, dude.
So that's what I'm saying. That's also an appealing. The West is crazy. Everything about the West is so much more appealing than the East. it's not even close. And especially when you look at I mentioned the other day, I think the play-in for the emphasis it puts on those top six seeds, I love that. I still have trouble sometimes with I fully in my core do not believe the Bulls or Hawks deserve another chance to make the playoffs when they're 39 and 43 and 36 and 46. But then you look out West and it's like the Kings are 46 and 36. The Warriors are 46 and 36. That's the Heat record, at the 8 seed. And they were almost the 5 seed yesterday going into it. Like they had a chance, if everything broke correctly, to get a 5 seed yesterday. Mm-hmm. So in that scenario, I'm like, yeah, this kind of makes sense that the Kings and Warriors get like a last chance to make the playoffs, and the Lakers are only a game ahead, Pelicans two games ahead or whatever, and so that does make sense. But the West is so much more intriguing with all the different potential matchups that we could get throughout the playoffs. When you look at this bracket right now, do you still have Nuggets coming out?
I'm starting to lean towards the Mavs.
Interesting. Okay. I know you've done on the Mavs.
Yeah, they're avoiding the Nuggets until the conference finals, which I really like that it broke out that way for them. I think if they were playing the Nuggets in round two, I would probably pick the Nuggets, but the deeper that the Mavs get into the playoffs, if they're able to do that, I think they're just going to develop those reps, develop that chemistry together. Luka, he can just transcend to a whole nother level. And I've done a complete 180 on the Mavs. But I said this a couple weeks ago. they started changing the way they're playing. They don't play the same way that they used to play. It's not all like Luka-centric slow pace. They're moving the ball up and down the court. Kyrie and Luka play really well together. They have guys that, like, PJ Washington's been awesome for them. Daniel Gafford's been awesome for them. Derek Lively burst onto the scene this year. Hardaway Jr.'s had a good year. Dante Exum's been a revelation for them. They've got all these guys that are just doing their thing. Derek Jones Jr.'s been playing really well for them. So with Luka and Kyrie being at that level, and as much as I like dislike Kyrie just because he's Kyrie, like, he's so fun to watch and to see Luka and Kyrie.
He's incredible on the court, man.
He's so good. He's so goddamn good. So to see them go up against Kawhi, PG, and Harden in the first round, first of all, is just such a good matchup. That's crazy star power.
Dude, how do they keep getting this matchup? This is the third time that we've had this Clippers-Mavericks matchup, and this is the first time Luka's had enough help that he has kind of a fair fight, right?
Like, it's been like Luka. I think this is like the whole Jordan versus the Pistons thing.
Yeah. All it very well could be, right? Like, he finally needs to get like Pippen on his level.
Yeah, LeBron against the Celtics.
Yeah. So I think that's easily, I think, the best first round matchup. Regardless, I mean, Lakers Nuggets would be close, but I think Clippers Mavericks. Dude, all the West is good. The West is insane with how good all of these matchups are, and it's not even finalized yet. I'm so excited for next weekend to start, man. It's just full basketball here from, you know, once we get through this play-in, and just all the matchups are going to be so much fun. Here's the last thing before we start talking about our guy, Mike Gorman, celebrating him a little bit here. Give me your final four. You don't got to give me anything else. I just want to know, what's your final four? Western Celtics, Conference Finals, and the Eastern Conference Finals.
Celtics, Knicks, Nuggets, Mavs.
I'm going to replace Mavs with Clippers, and we're on the same page.
I love it.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting as hell, man. I cannot wait. Super excited for the playoffs to get set. As I said, we'll have some more coverage for you guys as the play-in develops. We're working on getting a couple guests to do some more previews. So we should have some more content for you later this week. But to yesterday, we would be remiss if we did not spend some time here talking about our guy, Dorchester legend, BLS legend, Boston Celtic legend, Mike Gorman. And, you know, I mentioned yesterday's game was one of the coolest irrelevant games I've ever watched, because it didn't matter. Whatever was happening on the court literally mattered zero, and it was just a giant party for Mike Gorman. I started watching this game from the pregame, you know, half hour before, all the way through, and it was just people sending their memories of Mike getting to share stories, people talking about, you know, what they're going to miss about Mike, sharing this and that. And it was a really cool day to see for a guy that we've talked about, especially for Greg and I, who, growing up in Dorchester, knowing the legend, loving when he would sneak in a Tuohy Park reference or, you know, whatever it might be about St. Brendan's or St. Anne's, and, you know, little bits and pieces of the neighborhood that we could say, I know that guy, I know what he's referencing, and how much more that made us feel connected to this team the way that we are today. It was special, man. It was. And I think you watched it later in the day. I don't think you had a chance to watch it live. But I definitely got emotional at different times. What was your feeling watching it?
Oh, man.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's see. At the end of the game, I thought NBC did a great job producing the whole event. But at the very end of the game, where they had Mike Gorman walking down the tunnel with his back away from you, was back facing you, walking away from you, and they just blurred him out just like as he's walking off into the distance. I was sitting there watching him bed, and I got really emotional, man. I almost started crying.
Yeah.
And then like I just looked over at Danielle and she's like, "You okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm good." I immediately just started cuddling my dog and just was getting really existential for about 5-10 minutes, just thinking about like the journey of life, man. Like this dude since 1981 has been the voice of the Boston Celtics. We were born in 1989, and our entire lives, he has been the guy that we listened to. You know, it was emotional when Tommy passed a couple of years ago. Mike, man,
when Mike got choked up at halftime trying to talk about his relationship with Tommy.
So here's the thing. In the replay, they didn't show that. They skipped over the halftime ceremony.
I'll send you. I've seen some clips out there of the full thing. I'll send it to you. It's dude. When he tries to get into his relationship, he couldn't even really do it. He like mentions it briefly. There's a pause. The crowd kind of like, you know, applauds over it. And you could tell he just needed a beat. And it just seeing some of the clips of the two of them and remembering the joy and the fact that like, you know, their relationship, like it was more than just the broadcast team. Like these were guys were such legitimate friends. Like even Lorena was like, "So this is kind of just like you and Greg, but like two old grumpy white guys." I was like, "Yeah, that's basically it. This is basically what we're looking
at." Yeah. Well, I mean, for the listeners, Will and I have literally been best friends since we were like 2-3 years old. Right. And we're in our mid 30s now. So it's roughly the same amount of time.
Yeah. And so it was just a really special day. It was also really cool to see how much Scal in like Mike's relationship has grown as well. Mm-hmm. Cause like Scal did a really good job of like being like, "Mike, I got you today, man. Like I know that you are like Mike wasn't even there in the third quarter. Third quarter,
yeah, Mike had that was to so do. Funny. He's like, "Eddie House, will you come sit with Scal for a little bit?"
Yeah, so and I like Scal. The best part was they didn't address it for the first like 2 minutes of the third quarter, and then Scal was like, "By the way, Mike's coming back. He's just doing stuff today. He's got a lot going on."
And then, you could tell that like the longer into the third quarter it went, Scal was like, "I don't know if Mike's coming back, but I think he's coming back. He should be here for the fourth quarter." And then at the end, you know, at the end of the first half, it was cool having Wick Grosbeck there for the entire second quarter. And it was funny, like, I was kind of expecting Mike to want to call the game a little bit, but he really didn't. Like at one point, Wick was like, "You got to give us a got it, Mike. Like you got to say something." And then Mike was just like, "Oh yeah, Wick, okay. Like, you know, like we don't need to do all that right now. It's the Celtics against the Wizards. Let's just talk about life." That's like seeing what Mike Gorman wanted to do. But he's also going to call the first round of the playoffs, which is cool. So it's not going to be the last time we're going to hear Mike Gorman's voice on a broadcast. But it was it was pretty special, man. It really was special to see all of the people that sent in video messages. Like you had Mike Breen, you had the NBA Countdown crew, you had Danny Ainge, you had Doc Rivers, you had Brad Stevens. So many people sent in these messages, and it was really special, dude. It was really special. And to think that, you know, this guy that literally grew up in the same neighborhood that we grew up and went to the same high school that we went to, came on our podcast earlier this year just to talk with us, is the same guy that he presents himself to be on the broadcast. Like he's such a genuine dude that it makes you like, I was literally thinking during the game yesterday, like, dang, he's just calling a game, right? So like on some level, maybe, I don't know if he went through any times where he was like, "Maybe I could be doing more with my life" or whatever. But to see at the to see the outpouring of support from an entire city, there's no greater impact you can make on the world than what Mike Gorman did, although it was in this like very small section of like humanity as a whole. It was just such a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah. And well, speaking of doing more, he did mention he's working on a screenplay as well as potentially writing. He said he does not want to write nonfiction. He wants to write a fiction book. He's very specific about what he wants to write.
With Marky Slick.
I know. That's what I think we may have to do. But yeah, so listening to just some of the things that he was saying, and you know, like you said, having him on our podcast, that was like a very monumental moment for us as a show. And it was funny because that started from after the Celtics Nets in-season tournament game. I met him at a bar afterwards, and I was there with three other guys from Dorchester. And it was funny because in his interview that he did with Scal for NBC Sports, one of the questions Scal asked him was like, what's it like basically, you know, being from the area and being connected? Like, how does that influence, you know, your connection with the fan base? And he told a story about from the 08 championship parade where he said, this is my wife's favorite story. And his wife was there the night that I met him at the bar after the game. And as soon as we told him that we were from Dorchester, the story that he tells Scal is exactly what happened that night at the bar, where he said, my wife loves the story because she never really understood Boston until we were on the duck boats and a bunch of kids came running up to the duck boat. And we're like, Mike, I'm from Dorchester, like celebrating Mike. And she was like, wow, this is like crazy. Like they're so proud that you're from Dorchester and you're here on the duck boats with the Celtics. Like this is making like this whole city of Boston, the way it's connected, is making more sense. And I believe that his wife Terry's from Pittsburgh. So like it was starting to like click for her a little bit more. And he said that, you know, that's her favorite story to tell. And that was the exact thing that she told us as soon as we were like, Mike, just want to say hello. We're all from Dorchester. She's like, oh my God, this is my favorite thing. And she told us that same story. So it was really cool to hear him tell that to Scal and to have lived, you know, one of he and his wife's favorite moments from his time, and how that's constantly a recurring moment within his, like his time of the Celtics, is thinking about that connectivity to Dorchester. And then, you know, then having him on the show after that and being able to, you know, actually sit down and interview him for whatever we did, 35-45 minutes, that was just really special. And then it's still funny to me that we brought up the I would venture to say this might be his most famous or probably a lot of people's favorite call, is the Paul Pierce Al Harrington moment, which shockingly we found out he does not like. when he was on the show.
It seemed like he felt that he broke the line of professionalism.
Yeah, said, which I think was why
buried it right in Harrington's face. Like that's such a good moment. And
easily
when he goes, Joe DeRozan telling him to shut up.
That's the best part. And it was funny because knowing that from when he was on our show, that clip, that moment came up several times in like this Mike Gorman Day celebration of like his best clips. They even had Paul Pierce talking about it at one point, and he mentioned specifically, Paul's like, man, I just love when he says Joe DeRosa tells him to shut up. And like it was so funny to think about that now. And I was telling Lorena, was like, dude, he hates this clip. He literally was on our show. We brought it up thinking it would be golden content, and he was like, yeah, no, I could have been better. And we were like, oh shit.
Yeah. I really like that, because he said he liked the timing of it. He felt like the call itself, just like the rhythm and the cadence of it, was great. He just wasn't happy that he like got a little too Boston with it. You know, got a little too Dorchester. Buries it right in Harrington's face. Like he was literally on the park with his friends in that moment, just talking shit, which is really cool. And that's also why, you know, I think the city connected with him so much, is because there were those moments that snuck out where you were just like, this is just a dude from the hood, man. This is a dude from our neighborhood. Like what a good dude. And I was just thinking, like, you know, with the podcast, obviously we don't influence as many listeners as we'd like, even to this point, although the audience has grown over the years. But just to think the amount of people that Mike Gorman has influenced with the way that he calls a game. Can you imagine how many people have listened to Mike Gorman call a Celtics game? It's millions on millions of people. And dude, you think
43 years he's been the voice of the Celtics. 43 years. And, you know, I don't know how accurate the stat was, but
there's no way it was accurate. I love how everyone just, I know what you're going to say. Everyone just accepted that it was accurate.
Yeah, it's like I said, I don't think it's quite this number, but he has seen a lot of guys play and has influenced, to your point, over 43 years. Like, this is the only voice that we know, and you know, you can extend that out another decade basically from our line of demarcation for guys and women, just fans in general, that only know Mike Gorman as the voice of the Celtics. Like, that's pretty incredible to think about, that basically a half century of fans only know Mike Gorman as the voice of the Celtics, and that he's been in your living rooms for that amount of time, right? Like,
it's pretty special. That's
really, really special, and just a fairy tale story, right? Being able to have the path that he's taken and then end up as, you know, like he's talking about, hometown kid who was sneaking into the Garden to watch Tommy Heinsohn and those Celtics win championships, to then calling games with Tommy Heinsohn for 35 plus years, whatever that run ended up with, and, you know, being the local kid from the local high school who went to Boston State that became UMass Boston, and then spent his lifetime here being what will be a you know, he's a legendary figure, won't ever be forgotten. And now it's the Mike Gorman broadcasting table, so we'll have to ask Drew Carter next time we have him on what it's like to take over the Mike Gorman broadcast table. But I think before we leave you here, Greg, why don't you play that last clip of Mike here?
Hold up.
Let's do that here. This is Mike signing off here. Mike signing off here for the last time with the Celtics.
I got it, dude. I got it.
On camera here for a couple of seconds, I just want to say thank you to everybody who stayed through our broadcast and watched all this today. It was mind-blowing for me to have an experience like this, and I can't say enough about the Boston Celtics as an organization in allowing, usually when you just retire, somebody gives you a little watch or something, you disappear into the woodwork, and that isn't the case at all. So thank you, Boston. Thank you, Celtics, and we'll see you for the playoffs.
I think that's perfectly said. I don't think there's anything else that we need to say here. Mike Gorman. One hell of a run, one hell of a career. We'll get a few more listens to him over this first round of the playoffs, and we'll find out who that opponent is come Friday. So we'll check in as we know more as the play-in games get set here, the East taking place on Wednesday. So we'll have some more coverage for you. But, Greg, any final thoughts here before we send the audience out?
No, thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. It's been one hell of a ride. We'll see you guys in round one.
Yo, I flipped it like Simone Biles.
Miles from a throne, see me smile cause I found peace.
While I'm at home,
I rhyme a little bit different, got that sound of my own.
And with the time limit, I'm shifting, man, I'm proud that I've grown. It's that right time
to rise to the occasion, put the pen up on the paper
and flip the occupation. I'm getting motivated,
it's goals to be created.
I'm making this a moment, there's no time for waiting. I see the city from a bird's third eye word.
I learn to observe what the many won't find. Don't mind me,
flying to the moon, doing fine. See, sliding on the ground, I'll take another cup of rhymes, please God. I lost a dollar and a dime piece. They found me on the floor while I was trying to find me.
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing. But you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is four missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour 3-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour Foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.